Robert R. McCammon has written a metric ton of fantastic novels, including Swan Song and Boy's Life. And then he went away for a while. He just sort of stopped for a bit and then came back with the Marvelous Speaks the Night Bird. And now the sequel to that, The Queen of Bedlam, has just been released. And he joins us on the show at this very moment. Thank you very much. Hi.
Very good to be here. How are you?
And I understand that you have you've cut your sleep cycle short to be with us, because you work during the night. And is this something that you've always done?
I've always done it. I've always worked till the midnight shift. I work till about 4:30 or 5 in the morning. So
wow.
So yeah, it is early for me.
I do want to concentrate 100% on the new stuff that you have out, but I have to indulge my geek moment to just thank you for this great novel, Boy's Life,
which I have given
more copies of that book, pressed it on Friends, than any book ever in my entire life.
Well, thank you. That's just
one of the best novels of all time.
Let
me ask you first. You had all these big novels, and then you just kind of disappeared. Were you in the Witness Protection Program?
Well, it might seem so. It might seem so, but actually, long story. I had a little difficulty because I wanted to do something that was quite different from what I'd done. I wanted to really move away from the horror field and do something that was a little different. So I really had, I had trouble with an editor and with a publishing house who kind of really wanted me to continue doing horror, and I didn't want to do that. It was not my current publisher, incidentally. But anyway, I really kind of took my football and went home, and I thought the game was over. So, it's sort of a convoluted story, and it's one that I certainly won't get into now. But anyway.
Well, it's similar to the music business. Similar to the music business when a long-established artist wants to try something different, and the record company
exactly
says,
right.
Yeah, they say
sure.
No.
Sure. So I thought my career was basically over, and then I'd written Speaks the Night Bird, and it got published, and I kind of had a resurgence of my career, came back again. I got interested in doing this series based in set in 1700s New York, and about this young detective, and here we are.
Did you miss writing and telling stories when you were semi-retired?
I guess I did. And looking back, though, I enjoyed being retired because it was just like, it was just fun all the time. Of course, I really enjoy writing; it's great fun, but it can be pressure filled, and it's difficult. By no means is it easy all the time, but it's a lot of fun. But I look back and I say, what did I do all that time? Because it was many years. My time was filled up. I don't know exactly how my time got filled up, but it was full. But I did miss it. Yeah,
I have to ask: did you stay up all night when you weren't writing?
I did. I still stayed up all night, and I guess what I was doing, I would dabble with music. I had some computer music stuff going, and I have a little music studio at home, and so I did some of that, and I watched a lot of movies, and I guess I don't know what I was doing, but I was doing something.
Well, obviously, when it comes to this new series of books, you're doing research because both in Speaks the Night Bird and in The Queen of Bedlam. Now, maybe you're faking it. I mean, I'm not sure I would know the difference,
but it seems like
the detail that you go into just from the way people talk, from the way they dress, from the things that the simple things they used around the house to illuminate the room at night. I mean, it seems like that you have spent a lot of time looking into this
stuff.
Yeah,
I really did. I began in New York with the maps in the map room at the library, and that's really kind of how I started. But I won't say that everything is perfect in the book. I won't say that it's perfectly realistic. It's not, and it's a learning experience for me. And I'm discovering, after I finish the book, I made a mistake here. But really, for everything I get wrong, and it's very very small amount of things I'm getting wrong, I'm doing 20 things right, which is good. But still, it's a learning experience for me because there's so much to keep in your mind and there's so much to learn. But I hope I'm going to be an expert on the period when I get done. But again, I'm trying to make it entertaining and interesting to just a normal person who doesn't know all that detail. So I hope I'm doing that too.
The impression I'm left with is that colonial New York, you would have survived well if you had a clothespin for your nose.
That's about right. Absolutely right. And it probably was even more so than I pointed out. It was dirty. It was grimy. But of course, it's always been a city of hope. A city of business. There was a lot going on. The ships were coming in. Trade was building, and a lot of people from really all over the world there already. Even in 1702. So fascinating place. Even in that early time period.
Well, let me ask you about Speaks the Night Bird. First, what prompted you? This book is set in the late 17th century. What prompted you to write this historical, mystery novel about witchcraft.
Yeah. Well, I'd been interested in witchcraft and the witchcraft trials in Salem. And so I started looking into researching, and I found that there were other witchcraft trials around the country, around the colonies. And so, you know, I kind of took it from there. I had this idea about a young detective just getting started who might be involved in this witchcraft trial, yet have a romantic attraction toward the woman who's being accused of being a witch. And so it just developed from there.
Hey, your detective or problem solver, Matthew Corbett, is skeptical about witchcraft, and as opposed to quite a few of the characters in the novel.
Right.
In your research about this period, were there a few people who were skeptical?
Yeah, there were. As a matter of fact, in 1699, which is the year that I've set the book in, there really was a split between people who believed that, you know, you could tell the devil's marks and you could tell, you know, the devil was at work in someone because of their hair color or something. But, you know, and then there were people who began to doubt the whole thing. So there, it really, really is true that era, probably from about 1690 to 1700, really was an era where people were beginning to be enlightened in terms of what they believed.
And then the sequel, the follow-up, The Queen of Bedlam, just released, has Matthew Corbett a few years later back in New York City,
right,
where he becomes involved, I guess. Is it fair to say a serial killer?
A serial killer called the Masker.
In 1702 in New York City.
1702, right, absolutely.
Were there crimes in the early 1700s,
yes,
similar
there were
to this? Were there serial killers?
there was a serial killer historically, probably a little later. I think the first serial killer in New York was maybe 10 or so years later than I've written. But of course, being 1702, I wanted to emphasize that particular criminal. But there were serial criminals killers later. Now, there was a serial criminal who went in England at a very early period, like of 1670 something. Actually, his crime was he would go around London with a nosegay of flowers, and he would offer this nosegay of flowers for young women to smell. And there was a knife in the flowers, and so he would stab young women in the face with a knife, and that was about 1670 something.
Holy moly!
Yeah. So, you know, so it's all, yeah, hey, people are who they are. And they've, you know, that's one thing that I've discovered with all my research. People don't change that much. You know, of course, the locale changes, the city changes, modes of transportation change. But there's something within people that does not change very much over the decades and centuries.
The cares, the concerns, the mental issues.
The mental issues.
Seem to be basically the same.
Basically the same, absolutely.
And
right.
you, when you finish The Queen of Bedlam, there are some threads, I guess it might be fair to say, that could be picked up in the future.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that the Matthew Corbett saga, we hope, is going to continue?
Well, you know, I'm hoping, and in fact, I'm working on the new book now. That's what I'm doing up so late now. So I'm hoping, you know, I have the books mapped out, what I want to do, and I'm probably going to do 8 to 10 books.
Wow.
So probably one a year. So actually, I've come from being retired to being pretty right back in the thick of things, which amazes me. But you know, I'm really, really fascinated by the era. I'm fascinated by the character, the subject matter, and you know, I'm ready to go.
Well, yeah, it's obvious your love for the character and the settings is very strong. Do you see this as, let's say, 10 books for the next 10 years or whatever, as the only thing you're doing, or do you see yourself returning to contemporary times?
I don't know. You know, I want to concentrate on this right now, and this is what's really interested me and keeping me going, because I really want to know what's going to happen to Matthew. I don't work with an outline. I kind of work just with a basic idea. So I'm reading I'm doing the books like a reader would read the book, so it's exciting to me. But whether I'm going to do something else, I'm not really sure. You know, like I say, I'm just focused right now on this particular subject.
And you feel like that you are definitely through with horror fiction?
You know, I feel like I am, and you know, I really enjoy doing that, and I love that at one point. But I think I did sort of everything that I really wanted to do and that I needed to do. And the deal was, I really wanted to do something different.
And you certainly are. Now, when you're up at night writing, is there silence in the house? Do you like to have music playing?
I do listen to music, but, you know, I used to listen, when I was doing horror, I used to listen to all sorts of rock and roll, but now I can only listen to period music.
Oh,
so,
really?
So, yeah. I only listen to period music, you know, the Williamsburg-type music, and So that helps. It works. I enjoy that. You know, it's good.
I can see that as helping in setting the scene.
It does.
For these novels.
Yes,
well,
it sets the mood. Absolutely.
Speaks the Night Word was an amazing novel, and The Queen of Bedlam certainly carries on that tradition. And I certainly hope that we have many more novels about
Matthew Corbett
from Robert R. McCammon, because it's just so good to have you back.
Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
And thanks for talking with us.
Okay, take care.
Pod of Horror.